said, welcome home, dear. But since you've been gone, you see, we've been blessed with a darling baby, and a cute little one is he. She took the baby in her arms and said, Benny is his name. He says, I've been gone away 3 years, darling, can't you please explain? So I won't be so dumb. Tell me, where did little Benny come from? And every time he'd ask, she'd say, Benny's from heaven. His face got red, but still she repeatedly said, Benny's from heaven. He says, I've asked the neighbors that come around, but no one can seem to remember Benny coming down. Now about, he said, about a little thing like this, I ordinarily shouldn't bother. He said, but mama, what little I know about children, I'm sure they gotta have fathers. And as I look at Benny, he said, I can't plainly see Benny must be from heaven, 'cause he darn sure ain't from me.
Benny must be from heaven because he darn sure ain't from me. That's Eddie Jefferson with his own playful version of Pennies from Heaven. He calls this Benny's from Heaven. It's from his 1977 album, The Main Man. Jefferson was born in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, and he pioneered this vocal style that he called vocalese, talking out the lyrics of a song in unique syncopated patterns. Moody's Mood for Love, you may recall, or So What, Parker's Mood, and Filthy McNasty are perfect examples of Jefferson at his vocalese best. He was shot dead, leaving a late-night gig at a lounge in Detroit on May the 8th, 1979. He was 60 years old. This is Lead Stories. I'm Eutrice Lead, and it is Free Your Mind Friday. You know the deal. It's an open forum, and you get to call the shots. You speak about the things that are important to you, and hopefully you'd get a freedom of mind today by unloading or offloading your thoughts, and in so doing, enlightening us. 888-874-4888 is the number to call. 888-874-4888. So much craziness in this past week. And the kind of craziness in which just about everybody and everything was just off the charts. As survivors of the madness, it falls to us to put things in proper perspective. So help keep the insidious mind benders and mind stealers at bay. Tell us what we need to know about their shenanigans. 888-874-4888. Joel, you start us off.
Hi, Eutrice. How are you doing?
Good. How are you?
I'm very fine, thank you. So I didn't have a chance really to listen to much of your program yesterday, but I caught a part of it on the archives. I'd sort of like to chime in on the subject, if I may. And if I say anything that people talked about yesterday and repeat what was said yesterday, I apologize beforehand. In any event, what I really would like to talk about is green base building with Black Lives Matter. It's a subject that I broached with Jill Stein herself at the Left Forum that was held in New York at the end of May. And then I said, I think the party needs to change its name to the Green Panthers. And what I'm getting about that is that Black and brown activists in the movement have really, especially the new movement that have emerged over the past few years, especially Black Lives Matter. And these activists have gone in the span of a few short years through the spectrum of ideological maturation. It took, in my judgment, the civil rights movement about 10 years to go through before it became the Black Power movement. And having been in the movement in the mid-60s, this was a very clear change that took place from civil rights and even radical civil rights to black power. And I think that the movement today, or as it's germinating and developing, is at the point where people like Huey Newton and Stokely Carmichael were at their zenith. And this epoch sees activists, for instance, ones now, who subscribe to this, you know, the kinds of horizontal integration norms of Occupy Wall Street that has developed over the past two decades. But they also have a critique of imperialism and militarism that is way beyond anything the Bernie Sanders candidacy was offering. In other words, if we're going to have actual radical left democratic socialism in this country, it will come from these activists. And these young people have a kind of prophetic orientation to their acts of speaking truth to power that their elders, I think, don't have. Many of whom, especially in the political establishment, are stuck on Hillary Clinton. And these new activists have zero interest in the Democratic Party and make no bones about it. Simultaneously, the Greens are now executing their Green Welcome Mat strategy. And the Sanders crowd, as we've been talking about today on the show, has effectively split between Clinton and Stein, as really was expected from the beginning. And the addition of Ajamu Baraka to the ticket, who's obviously going to be the vice president, so we're told, was a stroke, the vice president candidate, was a stroke of genius in a way, because it scuttles the whole green baiting scare tactic of, you know, voting green will elect Trump. And as you mentioned yesterday, you know, there's still a lot of petitioning in states to get on ballot access. And I was recently, you know, in Connecticut, and I saw it going on there. Actually, in Rhode Island, it was going on, but I heard about it in Connecticut. So it would seem the obvious point for the Greens to begin to petition, to bring these petitions to Black Lives Matter protests and to begin to look for signatures. No, they shouldn't. That's only going to alienate them, because what people don't seem to understand is that a Black Lives Matter protest is not celebratory. Black and brown men, you know, are being murdered by police in the streets with impunity. And these protests are acts of mourning, the equivalent to a funeral. I mean, how would one feel if a white person showed up to a funeral that you were attending to campaign? So what the Greens need to do is get involved personally with Black Lives Matter on a day-to-day basis. That's what I mean when I used the term Green Panthers before. They need to build a base in the old-fashioned way. State Green parties need to be issuing press releases on every instance of police brutality. State party leadership needs to go join in the mourning and help process their grief. As we're talking right now, there are a lot of people who are pushing for local, you know, ordinances, municipal ordinances that would seriously impact and reform the police while creating accountability. And there are many such efforts going on nationwide in Black Lives Matter, you know, to pursue this policy. So green parties in every state can and should endorse these efforts and call on legislative bodies to pass them immediately.
Well, I think you also are seeing something interesting develop, and it's a bit disturbing, and that is there is a kind of voyeurism. I get the sense that people are saying, well, they're taking care of things, you know, they're on the case, they're involved, so I don't have to be. I'm on the sidelines, and I'll observe. And this is the exact wrong thing. Black Lives Matter is taking care of business in the sense that they are proceeding with a plan, and they have an organization, and they are, they are continuing to respond to what they consider an urgent need. But you're getting the sense that too many people are absenting themselves or just playing the observer role, and at some point, though, it should cause communities to take a look. Because part of the other piece of it, too, is that the establishment, the establishment community, these would be the traditional civil rights leaders, et cetera, they are becoming more and more insistent on playing a buffer role against movements like Black Lives Matter to tamper down the what they consider to be the ferocity of their of the movement. And they're playing that same old game. You know, we are the sensible ones. We are the mature ones. We are the responsible leaders. And these people, they need to get it together. And basically, they need to defer to us. So that also is a cleavage that I'm noticing.
Yeah. You know, the thing about the Panthers, especially around 1960, the late 67, 68, right into 69, was that, and I think it's the attitude that the Greens have to take, because what I'm saying now is that the Greens have to, you know, push towards coalition with like-minded radical groups. I mean, that's the only way that we're going to transform politics in this country. But the thing about the Panthers, Beatrice, in the late 60s, is that they understood that their political dynamics had very little to do with taking power itself. It had much more to do to implant themselves institutionally within indigenous communities. And that was their strength. And that was one of the reasons why they were targeted for disappearance by local and federal authorities. So, and you know, in Greece, the Syriza party, I know Syriza has betrayed its original mandate, but the Syriza party was a very, very small party. That was polling about 4% 10 years ago, and now it's the major party in Greece. So what I'm saying is that I don't think that we even should be thinking so much about this election, because after all, it's going to be Tweedledee or Tweedledum, and I could spend a lot of time talking about how dangerous Hillary Clinton is, how very, very dangerous she is to world peace. So our real need right now has to be to develop these links with aggrieved communities around the country, because we're the majority, and to begin building bases in ways that make real sense for the people who are living in those communities, and not worry too much about the presidential election.
I see it's beginning to happen, and I also see, especially in groups like Black Lives Matter, that they're no longer falling for the bait of, well, we have to behave ourselves. They're going
right,
ahead
absolutely.
With that program, which
absolutely.
I like.
You know, I was thinking about all of this, just one last thing. I was thinking about all of this because everybody's been talking about, you know, these conventions, but what really got to me, and which what I really found hurtful but expected, was Jackson's address, you know, at the convention. We have to just avoid all of this stuff now, and put our energies into building alternative movements.
Absolutely. Thanks for getting us started today,
okay.
Joel.
Okay, sure.
Let's go to Berkeley. Harvey, you're on the air.
Hello, More Than Wonderful, Utrice.
Hello, More Than Wonderful, Harvey. How are you doing?
Pretty good, pretty good. And today I want to talk about an important issue that affects all Americans, but disproportionately affects Americans of African descent. And it's about prisons for profit, America's answer to third world labor. Prison for profit industry raked in a combined total profit of $3.3 billion last year. And these prison for profit companies run more than 150 jails, prisons, detention centers across the U.S., overseeing 8% of the total prison population. And now that the war on drugs is winding down and illegal immigration isn't what it used to be, these prisons for profits need a new source of nonviolent working slaves. So not long ago, several states, in fact a lot of states, took food stamps away from, quote, single able-bodied individuals with no dependents. And when people go hungry, they turn to crime, such as theft, prostitution, violent crimes, drug dealing, and to get the money for food. And even they have new debtors' prisons, so a lot of the people who can't pay their bills will end up in these prisons for profit. And in the not-too-distant past, prisons for profit used both the war, I mentioned that, the war on drugs and illegal immigration. And Clinton was the Clintons were they put in the North American Free Trade Act, which actually brought a lot of Mexican farmers, you know, they flooded through the Free Trade Act, they flooded Mexico with cheap GMO corn. A lot of the Mexican farmers couldn't survive because they couldn't keep up with the low price, and a lot of them came here as illegal immigrants. And so here's the good news, that if you Google the words prisons for profit and Berkeley, not long ago the Berkeley City Council approved a resolution to divest from prisons for profit. And the city of Berkeley has more than $8 million invested in the Wells Fargo Bank. And the Wells Fargo Bank is one of the major banks that loans money to and invests in prisons for profit, amongst other big banks like the Bank of America is another one. So it's time for people across America to go to their city council meetings and call for the divestment of funds from the prisons for profit and the banks who invest in them. And in 2015, the University of California sold about $25 million worth of its investments in prisons for profits in companies such as GEO Group and the Corrections Corporation of America. And on a personal level, you can go to Google and type in the words, who profits from the prisons in profit? And all the names and the banks and the institutions who invest in prisons for profit are there. They come up. And you can go to your local bank and tell them you're going to pull your account if they don't stop this investment in prisons for profits. And new trade agreements like the TTP, the Trans-Pacific Partnership, and the Transatlantic Trade and Investment Partnership will further diminish jobs and offshore American jobs. So it's time to stop this corporate slavery now. That's it.
Thank you. Thanks for your contribution today. I appreciate it. Chicago. What does Chicago have to say today? Henry, you're on the air.
Hey, Teresa, how's it going?
Good. How about you?
I'm doing good. I want to thank you and the audience and the PRN network for giving us all this great information. I know I don't say that much, but I wanted to take this time to say it today.
Thank you. Thanks so much for that.
I wanted to take a break from national politics because it's, like, really getting sickening. And sometimes it's getting depressing listening to, you know, with the coverage of Clinton and Trump, and it's just getting depressing. But I wanted to give you kind of an update on what's been going on in Chicago. I haven't touched in Chicago for a while, but today they're going to be releasing another video, IPRA, the Independent Police Review Authority, on another police killing of a unarmed black man who supposedly stole the car, and the police caught him and shot him. And the video will be released. I think the video has already been released, so I think you can probably see it online. But this goes into my point of there has been a grassroots movement that's not getting much press here. A couple of months ago, almost about a year ago, Rahm Emanuel, who's the mayor of Chicago, was looking to do some quote-unquote reform of the Chicago in regards to IPRA, which is the Independent Police Review Authority. He wants to abolish it and establish another review council, which has an inspector general in regards to police shootings and killings. Now, here's the thing, all right? Now, IPRA is already a board that is, quote-unquote, appointed by the mayor. Now he wants to eliminate that and have one guy responsible who is, guess who's appointed by? The mayor. So these so-called reforms, they're not really resonating with the citizens, because, you know, he's having these hearings about, you know, these, you know, fake reforms. But now here's the thing. There has been a grassroots movement along with seven aldermen who are being led by an alderman named Carlos Rosa. They're trying to push a thing called CPAC, which is called the Civilian Police Accountability Council. Now, this council there's an established council in every district in Chicago. These councils are elected, all right? So there's no appointee there. They're elected by the particular community. And they're looking to have these councils established for the necessity of reviewing police shootings, reviewing police killings, and also giving giving the authority to, you know, to make decisions on, you know, prosecuting police, you know, removing police from their duties, also to giving the CPAC the power to appoint, you know, police superintendents, and also to review policies, you know, in regards to the use of force in police guidelines. So it's a very, very, you know, it's a very, very revolutionary thing, because, like I said, this takes, you know, this basically abolishes IPRA and anything else Mayor Rahm Emanuel wants to do, and it basically takes the power of this, you know, review authority out of his hands and put it square onto the community. So I think this is something that, you know, needs to go out, you know, to your listeners, because from what I'm understanding, some communities out in the country are actually trying to do this model as well. And Chicago, like I said, it's starting to gain ground, because there was a hearing not too long ago which had like about 400 residents who were, you know, and along with the 7 aldermen who were, you know, in agreement with this new policy. So I think this is something that, you know, the rest of the nation probably, you know, needs to know about, and this is probably something that can go towards, you know, outside of just, you know, these regular police reforms, to actually do something to get justice for, you know, wrongful police deaths and police shootings and police murders and killings.
Well, I've said, for example, I mean, Chicago in a sense is like New York. Here's what has happened. While we were very busy responding to the urgency of this issue, because it's now so pervasive all across the country, we've lost sight of a couple of things which I think we need to bring back into the discussion. And that is, a huge bureaucracy has been put in place and is thriving and is funded now and is predicated on the shooting of African-American and Latino males mostly. It has become an industry.
Uh-huh.
In New York City, I'll just do that as a comparison to Chicago, they always have had the power to fix this.
Mm-hmm.
New York City's council has a majority of people of color. At precisely the time that you have this occurring, you have no power. They should be calling, they should be firing the police commissioner. He's leaving, finally. But nobody's being fired. You don't hear about anybody being fired.
Mm-hmm.
Chicago, one of the reasons that it has such a major budget problem is that well over $600 million has to be paid out in connection with police misconduct.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Am I right?
Yeah. No, you're absolutely right. You're absolutely
right. So this is providing money for lawyers. It's providing a big bureaucracy, but it is not yielding justice. And that is the fight. The fight is justice. In New York City, these members of the city council have yet to call the mayor on the carpet and threaten to fire him over this issue. They have yet to call the police commissioner. They have yet to exercise the authority that they have. Instead, they're going along with these new bureaucratic systems, and, you know, it's not getting any closer to justice. This is the point.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody's paying a price for any of this stuff, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
I think that's really where we have to get to. How do you solve the problem? And they're all acting like, well, we solve it by substituting one kind of bureaucratic approach for another kind of bureaucratic approach. And a lot of people are making a lot of money, but there's no justice to be had.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And you know, here's the thing, too, also that made news here in Chicago. You know, the next major holiday is Labor Day. And apparently the Fraternal Order of Police here are asking in a quote-unquote silent protest to, you know, for police officers, because normally police officers normally get a lot of overtime on these major holidays, not to take the overtime. And if that isn't a clear sign that the police here are against the community, I don't know what, you know, I don't know what you can say, you know, in regards to that.
Didn't we talk about the president in 2014, right after the eruption of protests and violence all across the country in the aftermath of the shooting of Michael Brown? He impanels a group, a very august body, to study ways to improve things. They came up with a report which he proceeded to ignore.
Mm-hmm.
And then just recently said, oh, well, we need to study. You know, no, you don't need any more studying.
Mm-hmm.
What you need is some resolute action and firing people. You got to get them out. Publicly mm-hmm. call them to account. Your situation in Chicago, they should have Rahm Emanuel on the carpet. Why is it that in excess of $600 million is incurred as a tax levied cost because of police misconduct? And nobody, there are no heads rolling over there.
Yeah,
Everybody still has that job. Okay.
Yeah,
the feeling is, the city will find the money. And this is what I mean. Nobody's getting justice. So the bureaucracy has been organized not only to maintain the status quo, but actually to profit from it. That's the main concern. They will not change a bureaucratic system if it imperils the ability to make money.
Yeah.
Right now, all these awful things are happening, but nobody's losing their jobs. Nobody's being fired. Nobody's being recalled. The assumption is, well, you know, it's a bureaucratic matter. No, it's a justice matter. And people have to get aggressive about that. And I'm hoping in Chicago, because, you know, that's one of the leading cities, and also in New York City. Hundreds mm-hmm. of millions of dollars
yeah.
being paid out because of police, quote, misconduct, unquote. Well, gee,
yeah.
doesn't that itself say that the errant cops, rogue cops, are costing the city money, this
mm-hmm.
kind of money?
Mm-hmm.
But instead, Rahm Emanuel is trying to do what? Close down schools.
Yeah, he is. And we just got a report that they're going to be firing almost 500 teachers this school year. So that's another thing. But I think I'm very hopeful for this CPAC, because at least it takes away the power of this accountability board from the mayor, who is just, and from City Hall, which is corrupt, you know, from top to bottom. So I'm hoping this gets a groundswell of support here, because, like I said, the mainstream media is not covering this proposal, and the aldermen, the rest of the aldermen outside of Rosa and the seven other aldermen that are supporting this, they're really going to have a fight on their hands against the rest of Rahm Emanuel and his rubber stamp aldermen that are against this.
Well, we'll see. I'll try to look into that. Thanks for bringing it to our attention. Thanks, Henry,
no problem,
for your call today.
All right, thanks.
Let's go to Edgewater. E, you're on the air.
Hi, Trace.
Hello.
I hope you're feeling well. I'm glad to hear that you're feeling, because I already heard you saying you were feeling well today. And that
yes,
you get better and better every day and stronger every day, because we sure do need you, girl.
We need each other. That's the whole thing.
Right. We all need each other, and it's a beautiful thing. Someday we're going to get there, I know. I had a light wow moment on Wednesday. I just wanted to share it with you and the audience. I have such great callers and listeners that it just fills my heart with joy. But I just wonder, how do you decide what piece of music you're going to play to start your show off with?
Well, very often the subject matter actually, I use the music to kind of either be a countervailing element or to shore up the topic of the day, and sometimes it has no connection at all I love music.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, your music is great. The repertoire of music you have is incredible, and last week with Dolly Parton with Knocking on Heaven's Door blew me away. I had to put it on last night on YouTube. It was so great. So many people covered that song, but she did such a beautiful job on that with Black Mambazo.
Yeah.
Thank you for that one.
It was
also
a great collaboration between the two.
Okay, well, if I say that you're telepathic, it wouldn't surprise you, would it?
You know, I think we all are. I just don't think we pay attention enough to the ability that we have. We get messages all the time, I think, and we just don't pay attention too much to it. But every now and then we should, because I think we get messages in all these different ways, but we just are not encouraged to pay attention to them and take them seriously. You know, I mean, it never occurs to us that we may be functioning from time to time during the course of a day, that we are functioning at a much higher level than that which is obvious, you know, if we're going about our business. But we very seldom see ourselves as having a higher level of functioning. And so we don't really put that in the equation at all. But from time to time, some things happen and you have to say, well, wait a minute. I think I got this message some time ago, but in a different way. So from time to time, you do get a little tug on your shoulder that says, hey, we told you about these things. You already know about these things.
Well, I have to agree 100% with you on that. But I just wanted to share this occasion that happened on Wednesday. Well, it was Tuesday. I was the first caller, and you let me have my little rant about Hillary, because I have Hillary-itis, you know. She attacks my joints all the time, and I need to get some of that out of by talking about her. It relieves me of this Hillary-itis that she seems to attack me with all the time. I have a lot of pain in my wrist, probably from driving a cab for 20 years, but it's also from this Hillary-itis, you know. That's what's developed.
So okay.
If you let me have my little rant, and you thanked me for my call, and I thanked you, and I hung up, and I was making a little salad here, and I started humming a song to myself, and I was directing at Hillary and Bill. And guess what song it happened to be?
I have no idea.
Do you remember what song you played Wednesday to start the show off?
What was that?
Well, I asked you, I made a request, and I was sending it out to Hillary. I made a request, and you got my message, and you put Running Away.
Ah!
And she must have done something wrong. So she was running. I was singing that for about half an hour, and I kept saying to myself, please, Utrice, open the show tomorrow with that song. Well, you played a version, but you didn't do the Marley one, but that's all right. I mean, what can I expect? I don't want to expect too much, you know?
I did
Maybe
the instrumental
next week
version.
We can do the Marley version and let him say the words to Hillary, because I like to see her run away and never come back. But that was a pretty wow moment for me. You can imagine my surprise on Wednesday at 1 o'clock when I heard the song come on.
My goodness. Well, let's just say we have established a kind of psychic connection, you and me, and it expresses itself in some of the music. But that's a really interesting observation that you brought to our attention today. Thanks for the call. Enjoyed talking with you.
Thank you very much.
All righty. Tat from Brooklyn, you're on the air.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chiefly. How
Hello.
Are you doing?
I'm fine. How are you?
Good. I'm great. I'd just like to comment on your two previous callers. The gentleman from Chicago, I don't want him to get his hopes up too high, because here in New York, we have the Civilian Complaint Review Board. And I just want to let him know, if he's listening, if Chicago opts to copy what New York has, you're not going to get any justice, because that board is nothing more than a rubber stamp for the police department. They only review the complaint. They have no power to discipline the police. That's all internal within the police commissioner has the power. So if they've got that, they're going to get the same thing we get here. Nothing. Just bureaucracy, lip service. But you're not going to get any action. The only thing the New York City taxpayers get is to pay out the tort money for all these misconduct and police brutality. The other thing I want to say is, you are a psychic. But the problem that I have for many of your listeners, they just listen to you to tell you about the Bernie Sanders and how it was going to play out, exactly how it plays out with Jesse Jackson. Those 13 mm-hmm. million people who went out there and voted for him, they should not listen to him. He didn't have the nerve to do a Ted Cruz and tell those people to vote their conscience. He didn't have that audacity with him. So he's going to lead his 13 million people and hand them over to Hillary. But if I was a Bernie supporter, which I am not, I would still write his name in. So maybe they should do the same thing.
So let's go back to where you started with the police issue. As you laid it out in the way it's happening in New York City, do you have any idea as to what might work in New York and that might work also in Chicago as a different approach?
Sure. First thing first, here in New York, the mayor appoints all the commissioners. All the commissioners should be voted in, just like the mayor. So if all the commissioners for all the head agencies get voted in, they could get voted out too. But they all serve at the behest of the mayor. And mainly with that police department, they have power over that mayor. They stand the mayor. They're standing in front of his house now as I'm speaking, walking behind the mayor. Everywhere Mayor de Blasio goes, there's a group of police officers heckling him daily, because they want more money. They want a pay increase. Although they're causing us taxpayers here to increase our taxes from meters to water meters to taxes, all of their misconduct is causing us suffering.
But and they want an increase. I did point out that it is not outside the control of the elected officials, because New York City's council, made up of a large percentage now of people of color, at precisely the moment that they have a numerical advantage, they appear to have no political advantage. They are the ones who should be on top of this issue of police brutality and police killings, and they have not done the job. Everybody is trying to figure out, well, what new bureaucratic move can we make? But this is not about bureaucracy. This is about getting people fired, getting people out, changing leadership, and they have the power. As a city council, they are the ones with the power to call all of the parties to account, including the mayor, the police commissioner, and all of the other commissioners operating under the police commissioner. Why do you think that that's not happening?
Unfortunately, if I had the answer, I don't know why it's not happening. Considering you've laid the groundwork, we have a majority of black and brown people sitting in the city council. I think the last election we actually had it was 28 blacks and Latino, because I think it's made up of 50. So we had the balance. However, it's starting to slide. Why is not happening? I don't know. I really don't know why. Okay? I really don't know why. And unfortunately, the same community which they claim to represent, which they claim to represent, okay, their constituents, they do nothing about this. They do nothing about this. Nothing whatsoever. Nothing whatsoever.
But
I mean,
this is
the problem.
We have power, but people are just not flexing their muscles. They're not making these representatives accountable. You can't tell me. The city council has the authority to call all these interested parties to account. They do. And they are the ones who pass the budgets. They are the ones who basically are on the front lines of this issue, but they have been given a free pass. Nobody's asking them what they're doing, and nobody's taking them to task, and nobody is saying, hey, on this matter of the police and how they're functioning, you guys have failed. We are moving against you. You got to go. And everybody's thinking that somehow the problem will be fixed if the mayor fixes it. No, the mayor himself is also accountable to the city council on this question. That's where the button has to be pressed.
I agree with you on that note. Thank you.
I know. I could sense the frustration in your voice. But we have to, the good thing is to become aware of what a workable strategy would involve. The strategy is to make these people accountable at the local level. That's where it is. That's where the problem is. People are not doing what they're supposed to do to get the city council members to understand they mean business. And we're prepared to take you out of office over this. Thank you so much for your call today. I really enjoyed it. Let's go to Patricia from New York. You're on the air, Patricia.
Hi, good afternoon, Eutrice, and good afternoon to the PRN family.
Thank you. Good afternoon to you.
Thank you. I want to follow up the previous caller. Something interesting has happened here in New York. I don't know if you're aware that the police commissioner, Bratton, has said that he is going to retire from the commissioner position in September 16th. And already his successor has been chosen, a man by the name of O'Neill. Now, clearly, this morning, there was a poll that said that 72% of African Americans still support the mayor. And I found that quite incredulous. And when you look at the history of the mayor since he has been in office, I mean, it has been an absolute travesty when it comes to communities of color. He passed over Philip Banks. He passed over Pinheiro. His administration has been racked with one scandal after another. You know, the previous caller has touched on something. There is something about our community that remains, I'm trying not to sound disparaging, but they don't, once they elect someone, and the criteria by which they elect someone is very basic. If they look like me, they must be good. And we've got to get away from, you know, black faces in high places or Hispanic faces in high places and think that they are going to advocate for us or that they even have our best interests at heart. If anything should prove to people that no one has our best interests at heart but ourselves, it's what has happened, you know, with this election. I mean, it's clear, at least it's clear to me. And so when you look at police brutality, last week we had a state assemblyman who was at a block party in the Bronx supporting his community and his constituents. And there was an outbreak between two individuals and the police were called. And he thought that it was getting out of hand in terms of the response of the police. So he tried to intervene in the role of a mediator, and the police slammed him against the wall and began to rough him up. And it was only when a sergeant came in who recognized him and told them to stand down that they stood down. Now, He clearly states that had it not been for the fact that someone at a higher level recognized him, that the outcome for him, if he was just an ordinary John Doe, would have been completely different. What will it take for our community to recognize that they have to be vigilant when they put these people in office? I have started calling everybody in my district to talk about issues that are of importance to me, and I've actually gotten responses. So people have to, number one, stay vigilant and contact and communicate with those elected officials and put those elected officials on notice that someone is watching. And until we begin to do that, we can't expect to see change.
Well, the issue of police, I agree with what you're saying. The issue of police is a very local matter. It doesn't, you know, you don't have to look toward Congress and you don't have to look toward the state legislature. It's right there in the city council. That's where the power is to get all these changes done. However, we know how the Democratic Party is so entrenched in the politics, local politics, and the politics of the city council and the mayor, but people will be reluctant to take on the task of saying, hey, we are pressing buttons now. This is beyond acceptable. This is just unacceptable, I mean. This is really, really a crisis. And it is the members of the city council. They head up these committees. They have the power. They're the ones that pass the budgets and vote on the budgets. They don't have to. They don't have to approve budgets. I just talked with Henry, and we talked about the fact that the city of Chicago, which supposedly has a fiscal crisis, nonetheless has a bill in excess of $600 million due to police misconduct. And taxpayers have to pay that. So all the way back in the early, I would say the late 70s, early 80s, I did a story about how much money the city of New York had been paying out, because at that time it was called discourtesy and mistreatment, millions of dollars. And interestingly, when you take a look at it, they're not even discussing the settlements, the multi-million dollar settlements that come out of really high profile cases. These are just routine cases in which mostly whites who are able to hire lawyers to press their case because they're mistreated or they're subjected to discourtesy or whatever it is, and they prevail in the courts. The vast majority of the real harm is done to people of color. They're not getting any money as a result of proving that they were victims of discourtesy or misconduct or even death. So the power rests with the city council, and people have to make it a point that this is a crisis and they are going to go after those people who are in positions of authority to make these changes but are not moving. They're not doing that job.
The president of the city council in New York is a Latina woman, Melissa Mark Viverito, and she is acting a lot like Christine Quinn did under Bloomberg. And as a matter of fact, she just shelled, one of the city council members had introduced a measure that was community friendly, and she literally shelled it. And everybody went along with it. And I said to myself, why? Now, she has desires to replace the mayor at some point. And I said to myself, what will it take? People are not paying attention. I think that's what it comes down to. People are not paying attention. They can't raise a voice unless they're paying attention. They put these people in office and they go to sleep. And you can't do that.
I mean, how do you get... I read, you know, there is this... already the selection of the next police commissioner. Well, who has commissioner, the outgoing police commissioner, get to figure out who is going to replace him? And it's okay, it's all fine and dandy.
It was done with the input of no one. It was just announced.
No one
was just announced. and we're supposed to accept it. And I haven't heard anybody raise an alarm to say, well, wait a minute, what is this process? Aren't we supposed to have, you know, a process whereby we would look for people and we recruit people and we interview people and we vet people? What do you mean he's been selected, he's been chosen?
And you have hearings. You examine people's records and so forth.
Absolutely.
So this is where the problem is. The problem is we know how these things are to be done, but we still are reluctant to call those folks whose job it is to see to these matters. They just pass the buck and they go along to get along. And we tolerate that.
Well, I think the bottom line.
Thanks for your call, Patricia.
Thank you.
Thank you very much for your call today. Kwame from New York, you're on the air.
How you doing, sister?
Hello, how are you?
All right, how's it going? Yeah, what was the initial topic? Was it on black activism,
you know,
the initial topic?
Let me just hold a second. I think you're on speakerphone.
Okay, hold on.
Are you?
Yeah, hold on one second.
We got a lot of feedback.
Can you hear me better?
Go ahead. Yes.
Oh, yeah. What was the initial topic, black activism?
Well, it's Free Your Mind Friday, so we're talking all over the place today.
Okay. Well, your initial caller, I know he was talking about the first caller, he was talking about Black Lives Matter. I think one of the important things that happened, as far as this Black Lives Matter was the agenda they had released on Monday.
Yes, the platform.
Yeah, the platform, it had a lot of substance to it. The platform, and what I like about these young people is they're not compromised. All the handkerchief head Negroes, they're thrown to the waistband. I mean, the waist up. Also, it's good, and one of the things I like about them is that they see the reality of who the police are, and they're calling for the abolition of the policing. And they're going right to the power. We're, the previous caller, one of the callers was talking about, one of your callers was talking about you also about how much money the police pay out for these brutality cases. But when you look at it, and if they got the taxpayers paying for the money, but if they had to pay for it, there would be no PBA anymore, or no FOP, because they would go bankrupt.
Well, there was a thought raised that one of the ways to ameliorate the situation is that police officers, especially those who have a history of running afoul of procedures, should take out their own insurance. That's an idea.
That's a good idea.
We don't know how this is not going to work unless people insist that we've got to change things. The way it's going, it just the feeling is, hey, even if we get caught doing something, the city would pay. It's taxpayer money.
Right.
We don't have to worry.
Right. But we like where I live at up here. I live up here in Westchester County, Peekskill, New York. You could look this case up. His name is Jeffrey Deskovitz. Young white man. He was 16 years old. And there was a killing that took place, high school student. And he was framed for the murder. And basically, subsequently, later on, years later, even after he left prison, it was found that he was innocent, but after he left prison, they found out who did it, through DNA and everything. But the city council here in Peekskill, New York, they voted in favor of paying for the chief of police his, his lawyer fees. The city of Peekskill had to pay out. I forgot how much money they had to pay out. But it was this guy, Deskovitz is probably one between city of Peekskill and Westchester County. And I think, but they also took him when they abducted him illegally. They took him to Putnam Valley. So between the three entities, they probably paid out $50 million. It's probably one of the highest cases for, as far as the amount paid out in the country for somebody who was, you know, framed for, you know, framed up by the police or framed for a murder charge ever.
Well, here's the thing right there. It's okay, you have this person who was wrongfully convicted of a crime. That's the first address.
Right.
But what does it
right.
say? And this is what I'm saying, you know, it's about prosecutorial misconduct.
Right.
The prosecutors, nobody's investigating the prosecutor there. And
right.
possibly including judicial misconduct.
Right. Well, you know, Patrice, it's funny that you said this because one of the people in Westchester who helped keep him in jail during his appeal was the famous Fox 5 newscaster, the infamous Jeanine Pirro.
Oh, boy.
Yeah, so she was one of the people, yeah. Oh, yeah, when he appealed. And she knew the evidence. She knew that he had the evidence to be released, but she denied it anyway.
But this is what I mean. No, when we talk about the U.S. Supreme Court, I keep saying, no, that's not where the problem is. The problem is the slaughter occurs at the lower court level. All kinds of horrible things are happening to people, and nobody is made to pay, really. It's a rare thing that you see the Justice Department moving against a prosecutor
right.
in a case that clearly shows the prosecutor compromised the integrity of a trial by doing some
right.
really underhanded stuff. And I've covered enough trials to see, I could see it happening in the court.
Mm-hmm. Right.
The judge goes along with it. The police detectives, the Central Park case is a perfect example.
Mm-hmm.
Early on, I was the editor of a newspaper at that time, and we knew from the beginning, we reported
right.
from the very beginning, none of these young men who
right.
had been picked up and arrested and charged with the rape and physical assault of this woman in Central
mm-hmm.
Park, none of them could possibly have been responsible, because we checked, we've talked to people, they were not even in
right.
the area. So
mm-hmm.
we knew that there was a massive conspiracy, because they all worked in concert
right.
to just get these young men in jail.
Right, and the media, and had the media backing them. Remember Donald Trump, the
yeah,
mayor,
Donald Trump with his full-page ad calling for the death penalty
right.
and whatnot. But they knew this case still stands, in my view, to
mm-hmm.
be prosecuted and to be investigated, because these young
right.
men spent, in some cases, 15 years in prison. Their whole formative years just totally destroyed by a
right.
conspiracy by the prosecutor, including even the judge, including the investigating police officers and detectives, to railroad these young men into prison. And what do we know? The prosecutor is now a very esteemed law professor
mm-hmm.
at Columbia University.
Right.
She's
right.
been allowed to go ahead and have a nice life.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
So.
Yeah, with
so
yourself,
this is where we have
here.
To go. But we are out of time, Kwame. I want to thank you so
okay,
much for
no
calling
problem.
Today.
Thank you.
Always
sister.
A pleasure talking with you. That
you
brings
too.
Us to the
thank
end
you.
Of our program today. Coming up next, Alternative Visions with Dr. Jack Rasmus. Always something to learn from him. You can reach me at leadstories@gmail.com. It's the weekend. Surround yourselves with people who bring positive dimension to your life. A pleasure always, and a great privilege to be in your company. We'll see each other Monday. Bye-bye.
Hey, trade them for a package of sunshine and flowers.